First, a short remark on the nonsense collection. Since there are a couple of questions about it, we do have them in the Brighton archives, but they are locked. That means, according to the owner of Brian McGuinness, we are not allowed to show them to anybody, but they do exist, and I'm very pleased that they are being taken of, according to archival standards. They are a bit safer than before. And thanks for the advertising. What I'm going to present, or we are going to present, could also be put into the nonsense collection. We are going to proceed like this. I will say something about the method. We are applying to one special text, and Ulrich will present the interpretation and the outcome of the outcomes of this method. So, what's all this about? In 1966, a book was published by Cyril Barrett, the title Lectures and Conversations on Aesthetics, Psychology, and Religious Belief. If anybody has read it, you know that it consists actually of several lecture notes taken by Wittgenstein students. And in this talk, we are going to focus on the conversations on psychology. Actually, this is all about psychoanalysis and all about Freud. So that's why we call it conversations on Freud, actually. Three students of Wittgenstein, namely Russ Rees, James Taylor, and Ulrich Smithes, have taken some notes for this conversation, which takes part between 1940 and 42, I think. Yes. I'm just saying that. And these lecture notes were given to Cyril Barrett already in a typed way. So they are not the actual lecture note taken on the paper. But Rush Rees has already done a Reinschrift, which is called in German, or even typed it out. And Cyril Barrett published it. We are using we are using the German translation for a special reason, because the former project, we are using the German text, and we want to use the German text again. And what have we done with this text? First, we put it into XML, TI standard, and then we tried out the semantic web technology. So what is this about? This is to simplify it, it's to say that we are able to build up some kind of flat ontology. If you are familiar with Arlo's work in discovery, then you will know what this is about. Actually, we mark up words, and we say that this word belongs or shows up in some text. This is the very basic basic idea behind it. The reason I said words because is because we want to distinguish it from the approach others did. So the Bergen approach is going to say there's a specialist, an expert on Wittgensteinian philosophy, who's reading a remark and say, so this is about music, this is about mathematics, etc. Since we don't consider ourselves as Wittgenstein experts, we have to take another approach. We just mark up the words which are meaningful. What do I mean by that? There are several words which are not, which is according to I think the computational linguist calls them stop words. They are not, you should not search for it. Any form of being, For example, I am, nobody search for am, normally, this normally not a significant word in one sentence. There are some phrases like as a matter of fact, while matter and fact do not actually add new information. This phrase do not add any new information to the to what is said in one text. So we divide the text in several so-called sense units. One sense unit consists of mostly one paragraph. That's our unit of work, actually. And one sense unit should express one thought or one argument fully. This is the definition or the guideline. We may not agree on the border, perhaps, but you get the main idea. Nobody, if you are acquainted with German, then this is not very difficult to find out. And we mark up those words, really the words, in this sense unit, which we are going to call them keywords. That's a part, builds up a part of the argument. And then we give the sense unit a name, and we give those keywords also a name, mostly based on the ground form. So, for example, Keller, which is not used as the seller, but the author, Keller, will quote, there will be a phrase, it's called Keller Share. So he's quoting Gottfried Keller, according to his style of writing. And Keller Share would be underlined as something very important, or rather important in the sentence of the sense unit. And we would encode Keller as the ground form, not Keller Share. We could have used the lexicon to ease the work, but and this is done actually by hand, manually. So when some people go there and put, sort out the sense unit and mark up every word. To build up an ontology, you need some schemes. We use two classes, sense unit and keywords, and we say that we make some statements. These are technical terms in semantic web technology, but actually we put into computer, say that this keyword shows up in this sense unit. Keller shows up in the sense unit BW or something like that. And then we transform this information into appears with. So two keywords can appear together, as keyword Keller appears with thinking, denken, then only if there is one sense unit which combines both, which has both keywords in them. So the result, there are around 500 keywords for the conversation on Freud, and appear, that's 700, no, this is not right. Mm-hmm. 7,000, this will appear together with assertions. So this will be a mistake.
Right.
And then we can make something like this. So you put up, you build up a keyword, and then you say this is connected because it appears together with another one. For example, the keyword Grund is connected to Interpretation because there are at least one sense unit with the show on. And you can build up, so this is one part of the graph, because the full graph would contain 500 nodes and not nobody would get to see it, but this is just to let you get an impression on how this looks like. And the basic use is actually
you can see that if you are interested in Sprache, you should also see the Traum and Bedachten and Interpretation, etc. So there are more places to search for.
So, but on the other hand,
there's one, this is nice to look at, and actually we can do something with that, right? There's the mathematic discipline is called graph theory, and they got some tools to work with this kind of graphs. This is the second part I'm going to talk about, this, and that's the centrality analysis. For a given graph, with the means of graph theory, you can find out which are the centers, if there is any of this graph. There are different ways to compute it, and different ways means that there are also different centers will be coming out. And I want to show three kinds of computation. There are actually more than 20 in the literature. And this is widely used in the social analysis of social networks. I wanted to explain this technical part because I think it's useful to know how do you get the results, not only the result itself. So one is called the degree centrality. This is a paradigm case of degree centrality. See, nobody would disagree on that N1 is the most important node in the graph, because in the middle, but also because it had the most connections to other nodes in that. So you can if you draw the 500 node graph, you can say which are the nodes with the most degree, and that must be more important than the others. But this is not all the truth. This the second one is called closeness centrality. On this graph, although N1 has only two connections, we still say that N1 is the most important because somehow it's in the middle, right? In the middle means, in this case, that it takes from that node to each other node, it takes the least steps. So then it's combined with the shortest path algorithm. And it's because it's, you have to take more steps from N2 to go to N5 and N6, and it adds up. So the sum of the shortest path from N1 is the most, is the least number, and that shows us that N1 must be the most central in the analysis. But there's also another way to put it, and this is shown in this graph. Some people, according to the shortest closeness centrality, N7 would be the most central node, but N1 is also very important for some cases, since it's being the relay, the most important relay station for other nodes. So if a shortest path crosses one node, then it must be more important than others. So these are the three ways to calculate it, and each node is given a score actually by a computer program, and you can see the result of the analysis. So the computer is given a normalized score. The higher, the better. They are not there. This only says that Traum is more important to Freud according to the degree centrality. But you can find out these are the 16 most important words, and there are differences between each way to calculate it. So, for example, Sprache shows up here, but in degree centrality, but it's not the closest in the middle. And Ulrich will talk tell us what to make out of this table.
After you've heard about the theory and the concepts of the centrality analysis, I've tried to do a test it or something like that. It means I want to give more or less a report from the field. As Joseph said, we have chosen the conversations in Freud, and the way to test such a program or an algorithm is to read the text and to compare the results. I mean, that's the normal, the orthodox analysis such that text will get into. To be fair, we only wanted to, by reading the text, we want to make an analysis that can that delivers things as a computer can deliver. That means it wouldn't be fair if we say this reminds me to something, or this means something of, which isn't really in the text. because the centrality analysis, of course, can only process data from the ontology which is more or less in it. It can't explain something that wasn't, that isn't in the text before. Because of that, it is possible, of course, that we can link things that, that are overseen in a normal reading. The conversations on Freud we can summarize, we'll summarize it very shortly. There are some conversations. In the first, Wittgenstein is talking about whether psychology is a science or if there is a correct analysis of dreams. He's also talking about dream language and symbolism. In the second conversation, he is also talking about dreams, the interpretation, the nature of the dreams, and the connection also to language and to science. He's talking or is writing or treats the importance of wishes and the fulfillment for the understanding of dreams. The next conversation creates the question whether dreaming is a kind of language. Wittgenstein is saying that there is some similarity, but he denies that it's so. He also says there's no correct interpretation for every dream and no single reason or causation. In the last conversation, Wittgenstein talks about the interpretation of dreams again, and says that the three associations lead to the same results as the analysis Freud gives. I mean, of course, that's a very rough and simple summarization, and I didn't want to go, as I told before, too much in detail, because I only want to look at the things that lies before me, not concepts that maybe are because of knowledge I have from other texts or something like that. And if you see at the list, we see that by the orthodox reading or by reading by me, words that like Freud, Traum, Analyse, Interpretation, Sprache, Grund und Ursache, Reason and Causation seem words that are quite important and central. And we see that there's a strong similarity or an overlap between what I've read or what I've seen in the text and what the centrality analysis delivered. So I want to give a conclusion or something. The centrality analysis was able to capture the important words, but it doesn't, in my eyes, it doesn't give us something, a new information, or it doesn't show us more than we get before. I mean, of course, one thing that I have to say is that the text is very short, so maybe here we can't see a real advantage of a computer processed or computer supported analyze. Maybe the results are in certain, this is more or less what we expected. But I think during reading, I get the impression that there are also some disadvantages of a centrality analysis. The first is that the computer, of course, will only, if we have the ontology, it can only deal with the words. But it, especially in such texts, there can be the meaning of the words can shift in the context. For example, Grund and Ursache, the reason causation, sometimes maybe have the same meaning. A few pages after, it can shift to a physical and a human use. And if we have only the ontology with the words and with eliminating synonyms, this is not. We can't go sure that this is really in. We have mentioned it. And another problem maybe I would see is that the text, if we only process the ontology of the words, the neglected sentences can be a problem because the computer can't really hear the first thing if there's a if we mean the convert sounds or the other one. For example, if there's something beautiful and there's some negation in the sentence, it has another meaning, and this can be, in that field, maybe problematic. But of course, this is a problem of every automatic processed system. My impression was that, it's only at the state of the development of this program. It's a good representation of the text, but it's not. I don't see any great advantage in a human reading. So,
you don't see a great advantage in human.
Okay, I mean,
in computer.
Computer process. So, I think it's an interesting tool, but at the moment, the normal analyzers will provide us more precise. Maybe, I hope that's my impression. And well, but it's only a step, and the next step will maybe lead to another conclusion. I hope I give an impression of my impression. Thank you.